Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. Jake Shaw is not with us this week. I'm Stephen Cook, here with your publisher, Kevin Lundquist. Kevin, how's it going today?
Good to be with you, Stephen. I'm doing great. Great to be back with you doing this again. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Let's go ahead and jump into recruiting. Kevin, got a little news on Chad President.
Yeah, Chad signed a financial aid agreement with Baylor on Wednesday afternoon. It was announced via Twitter by Art Briles, which is a little bit different than what we've seen in past, the way recruiting used to be done. We'll talk about that in a second. But this is something that can apply to mid-semester enrollees. And this was a little bit of a difference from last year. Now, remember, last year, kids could start signing these financial aid agreements with schools, but they actually could sign them with multiple schools. Well, the NCAA kind of changed this, where the day that these schools send out these written offers to these all their recruits, if you will, that they're pursuing or they already have commitments from, they can also have these kids sign these financial aid agreements with the schools. So what these means is that these agreements don't bind the player to the school, although that's really not going to be a big deal here with the Chad president, but the school is bound to the player unless he becomes ineligible to enroll. So the bottom line is that the kid's scholarship is guaranteed in Baylor's 2015 class. And really, this kind of – Baylor's not going to be the only one that's done this. In fact, it kind of sounded like to me that Baylor picked up on something that Clemson did, because when Clemson opened camp – a couple weeks ago, they announced on August 1st that they had already signed 13 mid-semester recruits to these financial aid agreements, because they've got that many number of kids coming in January. And so, you know, when they did that, then Baylor's the only second school that I know that's done this. I don't know of other schools that have done this. And again, but when it comes to his letter of intent, Chad's still going to have to sign his letter of intent on February 4th of 2015, even though he will have been enrolled at Baylor in January for the spring semester. So, and I still think that there will probably be a couple more of these that will come down the line, but that still remains to be seen.
Well, with Chad also, and when you're talking about these guys being early graduates and hitting campus in January, with as much as a college education costs, it really only makes sense to try to get this financial aid agreement hammered out as soon as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're starting to see more of a trend. I don't know how much of a big trend it's going to be, but it is becoming more common to see kids enroll in January, in the mid-semester enrollees. Like I said, mentioned Clemson with 13. Baylor traditionally, I think it was basically one-third of the 2014 class, including the junior college players, were on campus. Baylor is going to have, I think, three right now for the 2015 class that will be showing up in January. So you can see where this is starting to become a trend, where more kids are starting to do this. Are you ever going to get 100%? No, because I do think there is something to where you need to allow kids enjoy their high school careers, you know, go to their senior proms, graduate, you know, that sort of thing, still be kids. Some kids are wired like that, other kids are not, and the schools, to their benefit, don't put any pressure on them unless the kid, but they make the option available to the kid so he can choose what he wants to do.
Okay, and so we've got Chad, President, has signed his financial aid documents. Now, there's also some other recruiting news out there. Eric Fowler, you've got a little information on him.
Yeah, the 2016 linebacker from Manor, who is a Rivals top 250 recruit, was at the Meet the Bears practice last week, came away with a very good impression of Baylor. He's actually the cousin of Terrence Williams, the NS running back who enrolled at Baylor back in January, and he is really, he had a great experience. He called it almost perfect was his experience there. he's still going to look at other schools. I don't think he's in a position where he's going to commit to anyone anytime soon, but I think that Baylor acquitted itself very well, and probably is, if you want to say if he's got a leader, even though he won't say it, I think Baylor would be that leader at this point. And we'll just see how far this goes in the next couple of weeks and months, but they're obviously going to let the season play out because they've obviously established some good ties with him.
Okay, and then also we've got Devin DuVernay with Sachse. What can you say about him?
Yeah, he's the 2016 wide receiver. Baylor offered him way back. They've had him on campus on several occasions, as recently as the August 5th controlled scrimmage. He was at the camp in Lake Highlands, and there has been some scuttlebutt that he might show up for Baylor's closed scrimmage at McLean Stadium. Pretty good recruiting tactic right there to get him on campus. There are probably going to be a couple more out there if the kids can make it work to get the travel to get up there to go watch that scrimmage in person. DuVernay is a kid that that I think Baylor is probably in the lead for right now. He's built somewhat like KD Cannon, maybe a little thicker for his where he was in high school than where KD was, but still a Rivals top 250 kid for the 2016 class. Kendall Briles and him, he's talked about, Devin has talked about the relationship that he's formed with Kendall Briles, and I think Baylor's in a good position there. Would he commit? Maybe, but I don't see that happening right now. Anything's possible, but I wouldn't see that at this time.
Okay, now, in terms of commitments, we've gotten messages over the last week that both Houghton and Malik Jefferson are going to put off their decision until after the football season.
Yeah, and to kind of just talk about those in general, let's take with Khalil Houghton first, because obviously Baylor was expecting a decision, well, everyone was expecting a decision from him last Friday, the 8th of August, and he tweeted out last Thursday that he was going to put off his decision until he took all of his officials. So that would probably be December, maybe January. But it sounds like he's going to take official visits to at least Oklahoma, which he's already gotten scheduled for September 13th when the Sooners play Tennessee, and he's working on official visit dates for Arkansas and Texas Tech. Duke is considered one of the teams in this recruiting race, but I just, you know, he hasn't worked anything out yet. I still think that Duke would be running fifth in this five-team race, and if he never gets a date settled to fly out to Durham and watch the Blue Devils play, then I think you can pretty much cross them off. He's told me that he will not schedule a visit to Baylor at this point just because he's been on that campus so many times. What could he possibly not know about Baylor at this point that he hasn't already seen or known about it, with the exception of maybe just getting some pretty nice dinners on Friday and Saturday night, that sort of thing. But, again, I think his putting off the decision really saved Baylor in this instance, because as we talked about last week, I really thought that he was going to be committing to Oklahoma. I also think the Baylor coaches sensed that too. And so, you know, maybe this was a chance where that Baylor caught a second break. They still got some work to do. As for Malik Jefferson, he's going to be a mid-semester graduate as well, and so he will be enrolling in his school of choice on the in January. And December 19th is, I believe, the last day of school for him. He will be taking five visits, most likely to out-of-state schools. He's got visits set up for Ohio State, UCLA, and Stanford. I'm sure Oklahoma will be one of those, at least, although I haven't learned that as of yet. Don't expect him to visit Baylor, Texas, or Texas A&M. He's already taken several visits to each of those schools. He's been to Baylor at least four times. You know, what kind of chance does Baylor have here? I guess you could say they have a chance, but they've got a lot of work to do. If they were to get him, I think he would, let's face it, if they got him, it would be a recruiting shock based on what other people's perception of what Malik Jefferson would do. So if they got him, it would be a huge step in the right direction. And remember, he was on campus a couple of weeks ago following a trip to Texas, where he got to have his brothers and his mom and dad see the campus, and everyone got a chance to tour the stadium. That was Malik's first tour of the stadium. So Baylor's making every effort to lure him, see if they can make the case to get him to not only seriously more consider them, but possibly commit on December 19th. We'll see.
Okay, and one of the things that with the all the guys going back, they're starting out their practice for their high school teams now, we're really starting to enter into a little bit of a, for the colleges go back more into evaluating the players again, and would you expect to see any new offers come out before the end of the season?
I do, because the fact that, you know, all these schools have these recruiting boards up, like what's our second, what's our third, what's our fourth choice, and if you lose your top three choices and you're still evaluating, then you've got to figure out what you need to do after that. So in some cases, this is the time of year where Baylor will be talking to some 2015 kids that might have been overlooked in some respect, and maybe want to get a look at their film through the first games of this first three games of the season to evaluate to see, well, if we lose player X, then we can move to this kid over here and offer him, that sort of thing. It's been done before. I mean, perfect example was Orion Stewart a couple years ago, the Midway defensive, Waco Midway defensive back when Baylor lost Zach Sanchez to Oklahoma. They went over to Orion Stewart, offered him. He committed right away, and it's kind of worked out for both sides. And then, of course, the rest of the fall will be, you know, some kids taking official visits where they're going to be seeing these schools play home games. Baylor will have a ton of kids coming down pretty much for all their home games, even though those will be more considered unofficial visits, but kids coming down to watch the games in the recruit section, that sort of thing. And then you might see a commit here or there during the course of the football season, but it gets pretty quiet because you've got a lot of things going on. And then you'll see the flurry of more commitments show up in November, or excuse me, December and January for the for teams that are needing to be for programs that need to round out their classes.
Okay, now are we starting to look at a little bit of musical chairs that, because Baylor doesn't have that many scholarships left to offer?
Probably about four, and they're at 11 right now, and so I mean, of course, that can change here or there. They may get it to 16, but everything that I've been reading and looking at, probably about 15. They could, as far as the position, I still think it's kind of a best player available, so we'll just kind of wait and see. They can always say, well, if you don't commit, then we're going to have to start looking around elsewhere to any other kid that they talk to. So very limited spots. And again, that's going to affect their rivals team ranking just because they just won't have the numbers like other recruiting classes do that are typically 25.
Okay. And the last guy that we had to talk about was Darian Daniels. He is a 2015 defensive tackle, and he is, by all accounts, something pretty special.
Yeah, he's number 155 in the Rivals 2015 250. He announced last week at Bishop Dunn's Media Day on August the 9th that he had a top 10 Baylor was in it, and he also said that once he puts out a top 3, Baylor is going to be on there, more than likely. And that's okay. I mean, again, I think as far as defensive tackles are concerned, Baylor really doesn't need one for this class. They could take one as long as it's really, really special. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch here with Darian as to what he does with his official visit with Baylor. If he does schedule one, does he schedule it during the fall? Does he schedule it in December or January? If he does it, I mean, and there shouldn't be anything read into that, only in the fact that if he wants to schedule Baylor early, that's all dependent too on if he can get it done with the coaches. But if he gets it done early, then I think that shows you how excited he is about Baylor and wanting to do it. If he does it in December, I wouldn't say that's a red flag or anything. But what I would say is that, you know, maybe he wants to make sure that he knows all the other schools because he knows so much about Baylor. Even though he did not get down to see Baylor during the summer, the last time he was there, I believe, was in March at one of their scrimmages. I think it was like March 22nd when he was there.
Yeah, but the thing that I'm and what we've talked about is that to me, if he waits until December, it's kind of like going to Six Flags after they're shut down for the winter, because you know Baylor might be getting ready for a bowl game. They might be, you know, it just seems to me that if I was really interested in going to a school, I would want to go there while they're getting ready for a game. I would want to be there for a game you know, I would want to be there while what's normally going to be going on is going on.
Yeah, it's all a matter of semantics and timing and things like that for him. And with his dad, with Darren's dad playing at Texas Tech, there's going to be the thought, well, I mean, he should commit to Texas Tech. Yeah, well, my contention is that if he's going to commit to Tech, it's because he wants to continue the family legacy, not because he has to. I mean, it would be whoever gets Darren, it'll be a great get for him. He's a strong kid. He's got great leverage. His feet are really mobile, so that really helps with a tackle. What you have in defensive tackles. And Baylor will make the push. They made enough of an impression on him to get him. To take a look and to get him to be to more than likely be one of his final three schools. And we'll just see how this all plays out once he starts scheduling official visits and how soon he'll... He did say one thing that he'll probably narrow it to a top five within the next couple of weeks. So I would suspect maybe around Labor Day we'll see that.
What do you think of the chances?
Of course, these things are always subject to change, too.
What do you think of the chances Baylor might be in the top five?
Oh, I think very good. Yeah, and like I said a moment ago, he said that he would probably have a top three, and that Baylor will likely be in his top three. So nothing would suggest to me that unless there's just this dramatic change in the next couple of weeks, that Baylor would not be in it.
Okay, and that is recruiting.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
We're back, and we're going to start out. Davion Hall is the first interview, and Katie Cannon is the second. Now, these are pretty quick interviews, because they were wanting them to get out on the field to practice, and if you're not aware, freshmen catch a little bit of flack for doing media interviews anyway. So here they are, and then we'll kick it over.
You got here this for the spring, so what differences are you seeing from high school to here?
Everything's just much faster and better competition. And just the play is a little different.
Okay, now, you know, your position's kind of changed. You went from, hey, we may be able to get you the ball some, to several guys have gone down. Has there been any change with the injuries ahead of you and what the coaches have said to you?
No, sir. I was thinking I wanted the red shirt at first, but I don't know what coach going to do yet. I know they have me on all the special teams right now, and I guess we're going to see how it goes after fall camp.
So, now, you know, most guys are like fighting to get on the field, but you were really kind of expecting the red shirt?
Yes, sir. I told coach I wanted to, but he told me to wait and see you after fall camp and how it goes. So.
Okay. And have you been getting more reps with the first team?
Yes, sir. I got a couple of reps the other day, and on through the rest of the practices. It feels good to be out there with the first team and being able to compete.
Okay. Davion, appreciate it.
Thank you.
I've been hearing some good stuff about you. How do you self-grade yourself on what you've done so far?
Right now I've been doing pretty good, you know, for my first year in college. So in practice I've been doing real good, you know, just trying to learn the plays, you know, get in sync with the offense.
Okay, now you were 3A in high school, right?
4A.
Okay. So what kind of differences are you seeing when you come here to Div 1 big-time school from a high school?
Really, you know, everybody on the team was the best person on their team in high school. So, you know, that's hard, you know, going against, you know, the best of the best. And, you know, the offense is real fast-paced. My offense wasn't that fast. You know, it's something I got to get used to.
Are the routes pretty similar, or are they asking you to do different things now?
No, the routes is, you know, the same as I've been running. It's just how fast we got to run it, because everything is, you know, real, real fast in this offense.
Okay. Now, the position right now, because we've had, you know, a rash of injuries at wide receivers and stuff, have they said, hey, things may be different now with what's come up?
Right now, Coach KB has told me just I got to mature. Just mature real fast.
Okay, and have you been getting some snaps with first team?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and are you working more with first team, more with second team?
I'm working more with first team now. You know, I do a little bit of second, you know, to get more reps, but I'm working more with first team.
Okay, so is Petty one of those guys that, like, fires the ball in like a cannon, or is he more of a touch guy?
He has a little bit of both. You know, Petty has everything. He's an all-around quarterback.
Okay. KD, I appreciate it.
Okay, Kevin, the big thing to me about that one that was kind of a surprise was Hall saying that he wanted to redshirt.
Yeah, I think the one thing with Davion is that even though he got to campus in January, he's the kind of kid that really wants to please people and make sure that everyone's happy and that he wants to do the right thing. And the fact that he actually went to the coaching staff and volunteered to be redshirted or requested to be redshirted, even though that's obviously not his call, kind of spoke to some selflessness there. I think Davion probably understood. And, you know, Davion went through the spring with a shoulder injury, and he missed most of the spring practice with that. And maybe that was a moment for him to say, I'm not ready for the Division I game yet, even though, you know, when I saw him last week at Meet the Bears, he looks like he fills out a Division I college uniform pretty quickly, that he's ready to go and handle it. But, you know, at the same time, I think from his perspective, like I said, it goes back to a selfless thing where he wants to make sure that he's doing whatever he can to help his program. And if that means by sitting out a year, getting stronger in the conditioning program so that in his full 4 years or however long it is, you know, that he'll get the most, that they'll get the most out of him. And so we'll just, you know, I do think that he would be a guy that would be a candidate to get on the field. We've talked about that before, Stephen, both he and Katie Cannon. And, you know, if those injuries that we talked about with Corey Coleman and Jay Lee or Antoine Goodley were to become more problematic than what we've been seeing to this point, then I think that would be definitely something that you have to pay attention to. And that's why Davion told you that the coaches haven't committed to that yet, because they just want to see if this all plays out.
Well, and Davion said specifically in there that they've got him playing most special teams. And then Katie Cannon said he's taking a lot of snaps with the first team, mm-hmm. and that he's taking some snaps with the second team just to get in more snaps. So it sounds like these guys are figuring into Baylor's plans.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, with KD, he's a guy that could translate to the NFL, or excuse me, to the college game. I know he wants to play NFL, but he could translate to the college game pretty quickly just based on the fact that he has that unique talent. And it's not a it's by design that they've got him working with the first team. Now, whether or not that really means anything once they get started in a couple weeks against SMU is another thing. But I think the reason why they want to put him out there is that, look, if we need you to play during the course of the 2014 season, we want you to develop a rapport with Bryce Petty to understand how the ball comes off of his hand on touch balls, deep balls, things where Bryce has got to fit it through a tight window and he's got to put some zip on it, so that you'll kind of understand how that relationship is working between you and Bryce. So there's a lot of things to be gained out of that, because let's face it, if KD wasn't working with Bryce Petty at all during the course of the fall camp, with the exception of maybe some side work here and there, and all of a sudden somebody gets hurt and they put him in the game and he's never worked with Bryce or rarely worked with Bryce, that would be a worst case, and that could be a disaster waiting to happen. So this is something so that, one, they get a feel with each other out there, and two, if they do need him and if they do play him, they have a sense of how each works and how those two could work together out there on the field.
Yeah, and I noticed that, you know, I asked him what the coaches had told him, you know, with the injuries coming up and everything, and he said Coach KB, that I assume is Kendall Bryles, right, just told me I need to mature fast. And mm-hmm. so that sounds to me like he's going to hit the field.
Yeah, I mean, it would really be one of those things where you're going to have to find out if, even though there's tremendous depth with this staff, there's such a great competition there and there's such great talent in that wide receiver core, that if KD just starts to blow it up at the end of the camp, or at any point during the season, and if one of these other guys is not performing to the level that they think that he's capable of, they wouldn't hesitate to put he or Davion Hall in there if they felt like it gave him the best chance to win. Look, you get a scholarship, it doesn't mean that it's an entitlement, it's a right, it's a privilege that you get it, but you have to work to maintain it every single day that you're with this program. And you know, I think Katie has always had thoughts about himself wanting to play immediately once he got down there. Baylor's told him that, you know, when they recruited him, and said, we'll play you right away as long as you do what we ask you in camp. And so that's where Baylor's kind of being true to its word with him when they recruited him, saying, look, you do the work in the fall camp and that sort of thing, and even in the summer camp, the summer strength and conditioning programs and all that stuff, we'll give you an opportunity in fall camp, but you've got to show it to warrant our faith in you to put you out there on Saturdays in the fall. Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting sign, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
We have the first thing we were going to talk about was the injury bug that seems to have bitten the Bears the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's kind of hitting droves. It's nothing that would be, if you will, something that's going to keep a guy out or several guys out until the middle of the season, with the exception of Clay Fuller with his fractured clavicle. That'll probably keep him out till perhaps maybe the first week of October, which would be the Texas game. Maybe September, maybe they get him back for Iowa State, or maybe the worst-case scenario, TCU on October 11th in the McLean Stadium Big 12 opener. But, you know, you've got Corey Coleman, who's got a hamstring issue that Art Briles spoke about. That I think that Art was a little bit more concerned about that one than the hamstring issue that was bothering Jay Lee. Art thinks that Jay could be back, I think, you know, as late as Monday. And with a kid like Coleman, who's one of those guys who's just really, really well put together. You know, he's a guy that they probably will want to just be very, very cautious with. I would suspect that Corey is not even going to practice until maybe the week of the SMU game. That's just my take on this, the way this is looking. And then you got Antoine Goodley, who's got a little bit of a quad deal. It's nothing of a great significance. I think if it was a game and they needed him to play, that he would be available. But when you're in camp and you also are aware of what Antoine can do, why risk putting him out there to aggravate the injury or make it worse? You, as a coaching staff, you could live with the injury if it happens during a game, but if it happens in practice and you don't even have him for a stretch of games or whatever, then that's when you kind of feel sick to your stomach. Then you got a couple of other kids. The running back situation is something that I've always felt like has been, you know, there's very good talent there, but the depth there is the one thing that I've always looked at and said, okay, you've got two pretty good players there in Shocklinwood and Devin Chafin, but you don't know anything about Johnny Jefferson, you don't know anything about Terrence Williams just yet. Jefferson's got a little bit of a knee ligament strain that's going to keep him out for about a week to 10 days. And, you know, with running backs, they're always going to have knee issues or just ligament issues. Again, I think his situation may be fairly close to Corey Coleman, where you know, they'll probably not even practice him until the week of the TCU game. It kind of makes sense right now, because if you look at the time frame, that's kind of what we're looking at right now. But at the same time, you know, he's not going to be in the starting backfield, but they're going to use him. So you want to make sure that he's 100% as well. Then Jordan Fubacher, the freshman tight end from Kingwood Park, has a MCL strain that's going to keep him out for about 7 to 10 days, so we'll just kind of have to wait and see how he progresses. I wouldn't suspect that he's even going to play this year unless they just get so thin with the tight end numbers that they would have to pull the red shirt off of him.
Okay, now we've also got Ira Lewis that's got a dislocated kneecap. And
that just hurts sounding, just hearing that.
Yeah, no, it sounds awful. But he's a freshman, and with the depth they've got on the defensive line, it would have been a real shock to see him this year at all. So just hope he gets better. Now, yeah. What we also haven't talked about is Sanders has not really come back yet.
Yeah, Chris Sanders, the defensive back, the JUCO transfer who came in January, still not back. He was out there on Saturday. He's out there every day, you know, going through explosive drills. I guess if there was one thing that you could take from, you know, recent visuals of him is that he was wearing shoulder pads, helmets, all that stuff to kind of get himself ready. And maybe they're just wanting to be really cautious. Again, we're only a week plus into practice here. Baylor's had two off days, which was last Friday and then which was on Tuesday. So they're kind of taking some things some things along here very slow. And again, with kids like Sanders and with hamstring issues and little ligament strains here, things that you got to watch. But as long as you don't have to get cut on by a surgeon or anything like that, then, you know, you're willing to kind of ride it out the string. Obviously, and just getting back to Fuller, he's not going to need surgery either. The way he described it is that the way that the fracture occurred is that it's in such a decent place that it should kind of mend by itself the way it's positioned. So, again, that's a good thing for him. These are just things in our camp, but it also kind of goes back to show you that, you know, your football team, you have all these dreams, you have all these aspirations, things that you're looking at in June and July. Then you get out there for fall camp in August, and then one player comes up with this injury, another player comes up with that. I mean, that just shows you that you got to go out there and you got to go play the games, you got to go through the practices in the season to see how it all kind of shakes out. Because if let's just say, like, if Bryce Petty were to go down to a blown ACL or, you know, breaks an ankle, heaven forbid, but, you know, something like that, it really changes the scope of your season. And the whole I heard a coach talk about this today, is that the enthusiasm and the positive vibe that you have in your season in August can quickly be snuffed out or erode from your body, if you will, if you see top players that are going to go down for an extended period of time. Now, Art Briles and his staff don't really have that, with the exception of Fuller. But if this were to, like, materialize, you know, in the next couple of weeks where top players are out until late September, early October, or something like that, then that really kind of changes how they feel. That really might have an impact as to how they approach the season. So while these injuries are noteworthy and things that you have to watch, they're not so severe enough to the point where everyone should hit the panic button, but these are things that you obviously have to pay attention to.
Well, I think one of the things, too, is that we've got Fuller, Coleman, Goodley, and Lee. And, of course, Rhodes left the program earlier this year. Right. So as much as we're talking about depth at wide receiver, that's a lot of injuries in one position group.
Oh, yeah, it is. Baylor's extremely – if there's one position on this team that could really withstand that, it would be wide receiver, although you don't really want to put that to the test in August. You'd rather see that be put to the test in November. But, again, it's early enough in August to where these things, in some cases, like, you know, Goodley and Lee should be pretty much okay. We'll just have to watch Corey Coleman. Maybe the week of the SMU game is when he gets back on the field and practices, that sort of thing. And then we'll just kind of, like I said, not severe enough so that it's like, man, this is a major issue, but something you just have to be wary of to make sure that it doesn't get any worse than what they are at.
Okay, and which area of the team do you think could least afford to have injuries? And obviously Petty, because, again, this year the debate's who's the second best quarterback in the Big 12.
Yeah.
But other than Petty, who would you see as being the position group that would be the toughest to take a lot of injuries?
I think the two for me would be running back and and we didn't even mention Johnny Jefferson. We'll get to him in a second. But running back and also linebacker. With running back, you know, Johnny Jefferson has a knee ligament strain, and he's going to be out for about 7 to 10 days, just like the backup tight end Jordan Fubacher, who's got an MCL strain. He's going to be out for a while. But, you know, with the running back situation, you've got Shaq Linwood and Devin Chafin, who are your known starters. Then you've got Johnny Jefferson, whom you've watched have a very good spring and was off to a good start at camp. And then you got Terrence Williams, who's basically the replacement to Glasgow Martin. in a lot of respects. But you don't know anything about him just because he hasn't played. So I think if, you know, I kind of was thinking about this earlier. It's like, my gosh, if they lose two kids like they did last year with Glasgow and Lake Seastrunk. Now, of course, they threw Shock and Devin into it last year, and those kids performed brilliantly, but they also had some time in the program. You know, I think with the running backs, with could you put Johnny at the Shock spot, or could you put Terrence at Devin Chafin's spot? I guess you're going to have to if it really got to that point. I don't think the coaching staff would like to envision that, but I guess the question is going to be is who would be the fifth running back on this app? And I just don't know if there's one that you really want to throw out there just yet, because the one kid that they did who did get some carries, you know, in a lot of reserve time was Anthony Webb. Well, he's out for the year with a torn ACL. So it's a really interesting story as to what would happen there. As far as linebackers are concerned, okay, you got Bryce Hager coming back from the quad. Everything looks good with him. But if you lose him, that really takes the heart and soul away from your defense. And then you got the coaching staff trying to scramble to replace his spot right there. You've already got enough questions with the Willside linebacker because you haven't even really picked a starter yet between Avion Edwards and Taylor Young. And if you lose one of those kids, who you expect, then you've got a lot of young kids or inexperienced kids or kids that you recruited that you thought were going to be something and they didn't turn out to be. So linebacker depth is a question for this team. Once you get past the starters, there's just a lot of inexperience there. And I think that's probably why some folks who are looking at Baylor strongly would really like to know, you know, once you get past the defensive line, which is really good, can those linebackers really step up? And if linebackers are getting hurt from who are considered who are starters, you know, are there going to be enough guys that can really handle it? We'll see. Hopefully we won't have to see that, but we could. We just never know how a season plays out.
At running back, if they end up losing some people, I could see them moving somebody from another position. You know, Goodley has taken some handoffs before.
Right.
And I know they'd a lot rather have him out at wideout, but he's played running back before.
Right.
And they might look at somebody else, from, I don't know, from the defense or something, somebody that has a backup, has a history. I'm not sure they got a second. I think they're still kind of trying to figure out their first plan for that Will linebacker, and I'm not sure they've got a backup plan for that yet.
Yeah, it's, I'm looking, as I've looked at the stats with this team last year as far as the running game is concerned, the thing that just kind of jumps out at you is, if you think about it in terms of total yardage, the sixth leading rusher on this team, and I know that's sixth, but that was Bryce Petty, or fifth leading rusher was Bryce Petty, and then it's a bunch of other guys after that are just kind of under the radar. So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, maybe a guy like Lynx Hawthorne, who's a pretty good athlete in his own right, that can flex it on him. He's going to be on the two deep chart in some respects at an inside receiver spot. But he's kind of but Lynx is one of those athletes that can really make an impact wherever you put him, and he's going to be a hard enough yes or no sir kind of player that will do whatever you ask him to do. And I think that, he might be a guy that you would want to look at. Yeah, 84 is a weird number to look at running back, but at the same time, I wouldn't dismiss that either.
Yeah, Lynx is a little bit taller than most of the running backs Baylor's had, but he does have a little bit of bulk on his body, so he could probably do a little bit of running. But I have noticed that none of the Baylor running backs that you see are these huge guys. They're guys that can hide behind the line and find the crease.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the way they've got it set. Shock is 5'9", 200. Devin is the big kid, if you will, at 6'2", 225. Then Terrence is at 6'2", 225. That would be Glasgow's replacement. But then you go back to Johnny Jefferson at 5'10", 200, give or take. I really think with this team that I'm more concerned right now really about the depth with the linebacker situation than I am anywhere else. I mean, I know what I said about running back, but, the more you think about it, the linebacker situation there with just depth and known quantities or known elements, if you will, that's the part that I just go, you know, what would you do if you lost these guys? You know, you would have a guy like Raekwon Davis in there who could be in the mix. I get all that. But the other question is, you know, but we haven't seen him either. And, you know, they're all some of those other candidates on the two deep chart are coming off of redshirt freshman years. So that would be the great unknown for the linebacker. Again, Raekwon is a redshirt freshman. If you're talking nickelback, you got Pat Levels, who's a sophomore. You've got Trevon Blanchard, who's a redshirt redshirt freshman. And I know that Grant Campbell, who came over from California, can be a guy who can be a contributor, but don't know about him just yet either. So it'd be more of mysteries, and just it's kind of like, to use the frame, you won't know until you know where these guys all stand, if you need them in a particular spot.
Well, it was one of the points you made last week, that when you're talking about running backs, that tends to translate a little more directly, that if a guy can run at, you know, in one offense, he can generally run in another because it's cuts and everything like that. But when you're looking at linebacker, there's only so much you can tell with measurables, because if you look at Bryce Hager, his measurables, that's not what's making him a good linebacker. It's the stuff that, it's the way he reacts. It's how he reads. You know, yeah. That's the stuff with a linebacker. And with the linebackers, you just don't know until you see them in a game situation.
Yeah, no question. So, like I said, you just don't know until you know. And, you know, when they recruited Eddie Lackey a couple years ago, not many people were really sure about Eddie, and he kind of left Baylor as a legend. So you just never know how things will pan out.
Okay. All right. When we come back, we are going to make a quick run through Baylor's schedule and see how it sizes up this year.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Okay, and we are back, and so our schedule starts out, and Kevin, I'm sitting here looking at the schedule, and to me, this schedule, I think, lines out a little bit better than the one last year. Last year seemed really backloaded with some tough games. Mm-hmm. This one, the hard games seem to me like they're a little more spread out.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, Stephen. The difference, I think, from last year's schedule to this year's schedule is that, one, the road schedule, I think, is a little bit more challenging. Well, not a little bit, it is more challenging, because you got to go to Austin on October 4th, and then you have to go to Norman against Oklahoma on November 8th. And a lot of people might be looking at, you know, October 18th at West Virginia as a game that they probably should win, given how, you know, the expectations for West Virginia are not that great. West Virginia is one of those games where it could be viewed as very much of a trap game, because remember, Oklahoma State, which is a very good team last year, lost up in Morgantown unexpectedly. I think a lot of people were not even thinking that was going to be an issue for the Cowboys, and they wound up losing that game up there, even though West Virginia didn't have a very good team. And that West Virginia game will end a stretch of 4 out of 5 games that Baylor will play on the road. They're going to start this road swing, if you will, at Buffalo on a Friday night, which is going to be on September 12th. Then they're going to go to they'll have a week off, and then they'll go to Iowa State to open a Big 12 play on the 27th of September. Then they go to Austin to play Texas October 4th. You know, we talked about it in our Big 12, or should say in our 20-question series, where we all thought, which game did we think was the one that was going to have the most impact, the must-win, if you will, for the season? And I said October 4th against Texas because, number one, you got to play in Austin, which is never easy, regardless of where Texas's program is at. It's still a proud program. Number two, you've got a program that kind of that wants to kind of show itself and affirm itself under a new coach in Charlie Strong. and we'll already have played two pretty quality caliber opponents in UCLA and BYU. I should point that out. And then thirdly, you know, Texas is probably wanting to get a little payback here since it's lost three out of the last four to Baylor, lost the Big 12 championship title to Baylor, if you will. So I think some of those things will be a lot of great motivational factors for a lot of kids that were on the Texas team last year to kind of pay it back. If Baylor finds a way to survive that game, and I think it will be a survival game in my judgment, if Baylor finds a way to survive that game, then I think that really shapes them up for the rest of the season. And then the next difficult game will be in Norman on the 8th of November. And keep in mind, too, that's, you know, they've got the back-to-back stretch with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. And, you know, then, they got Tech at Cowboys Stadium, second to last game of the year over the Thanksgiving weekend. And then they're home to Kansas State that first weekend of December. And, of course, we shouldn't forget Kansas homecoming on November 1st. So, you know, it's not backloaded. It's still kind of balanced out a little bit. There's still some questions like with Oklahoma State and with Kansas State about where they're really at. But, you know, it's conference action. Every game is hard. Winning on the road is hard, and I don't care if you're going to be trying to win at Iowa State, which Baylor lost at a couple years ago. If you're going to win on the road at the last place team or Norman, Oklahoma, winning in Lawrence or winning in Norman, if you win on the road in your league, it's a good win, and you better enjoy it because you don't get to win because winning on the road is so darn hard because you've got everybody in the opposing building against you.
Yeah, what I'm looking at right now, and when I say I think it balances out a little bit better, is that you do have these traditional teams that give Baylor a hard time. They're more spread out. You know, when they closed out with, you know, Oklahoma Tech, Oklahoma State, TCU, and Texas, that was a hard back five. And and they just don't have a stretch that bad this season.
Now, I would agree with that because, you know, like I said, there were too many questions with Oklahoma State at this point. We're talking here in August. But there's too many questions with Oklahoma State. Tech might be fairly decent as long as they can get a semblance of a running game together and they can find a defense that can really shut down the run. And, of course, Baylor's won the last three meetings from Tech. And Kansas State's always going to be a difficult matchup just because Bill Snyder's kids just play such a sound, fundamental game. But, again, it's not like it was as backloaded as it was from last year. But, you know, Baylor stood up to the challenge. In those last five games, they went 4-1 and won a Big 12 championship despite all of that.
Okay. Now, in the non-conference, when they open up, the one game that I see, and a lot of people think I'm kidding about it, but that Buffalo Bulls game makes me a little bit nervous. They got I saw that Buffalo's, they're coming out with matte black helmets for the Baylor game. You know, they're going to have special uniforms. Baylor utterly embarrassed them last year.
Absolutely.
And this is the third game in 13 days. So that's going to be, you know, and it's up in New York, which is a long travel. So, yeah, Baylor ought to win that game, but I don't think it's going to be the same kind of thing that it was last year where Buffalo comes down. Mm-hmm. They left 70 degrees to come to 115 degrees.
Yeah.
We're just, you know, all dehydrated and wanted back on the bus at the end of the first quarter.
Yeah. It was that game I'll never forget because it was so hot. I think, what was it, at halftime that everyone bailed out of one side of Floyd Casey to go to the cover to the press box side of Floyd Casey so they could get some shade there just because it was so rough that afternoon. But, you know, going on the road, you know, that game at Buffalo reminds me of the game a couple years ago when they went to Monroe on a Friday night to play against Louisiana Monroe. The Warhawks, you know, had previously knocked off Auburn and took Arkansas to the wire in the next meeting. So Baylor knew what they were getting into in that game and wound up winning that game by about 5 points. I think it was 47-42. So they understand that when you are going to a, if you will, a mid-major program's house It's moved to a Friday night for a special TV appearance for Buffalo. You've got a highly ranked program that should be 2-0 after easily taking care of SMU and Northwestern State, in my judgment, against a Buffalo team that will want to throw it all out there. Now, whether or not it's probably going to be a very difficult first quarter for Baylor to get through because those kids are going to be so jacked up for Buffalo. And then as once the game settles in, if Baylor's kind of handled that, weathered that initial storm, they should take care of business.
Yeah, but this is one of those things that Baylor, this is another thing, you know, when we talk about Baylor taking steps, is that Baylor's got to get used to playing games. If they're going to be, they aspire to be a blue blood. They're not there yet, but they're aspiring to it. If they want to end up being a blue blood, they're going to have to reach a point where they can go out and win a game when it means a lot more to the other team than it does to them. And you saw what happened with UCF, and I'm not comparing Buffalo to UCF, but UCF was jacked about that game and Baylor wasn't.
Right. You know, in college football, while there are decided more or less, you know, you kind of get a feeling of who's going to beat who, and Baylor should handle this game. You just don't – the great thing about college athletics, though, is that there's still that opportunity for David to rise up and knock off Goliath. There's still that opportunity for that to happen. So in that respect, you really have to make sure that your kids are focused. And we've seen it throughout the history of college athletics where a team that was so full of itself and thought that it couldn't be stopped or whatever plays a team that knows that they've probably been disrespected, and that team has gone out and knocked them off. Whatever you want to say about what happened with the Central Florida game in the Fiesta Bowl, about whether or not Baylor took UCF seriously, I don't think that was it. But I also think, too, that UCF just really wanted to prove a point, and they did. And and the other thing is now is that, and Art Briles talked about this, and the players talked about this at Big 12 Media Days, and even right before fall camp started, about saying we know that we're in a different position of being the hunted, and that teams and other programs will look at us now in a far different way than they looked at us 3 or 4 years ago. The question is, how do you handle that? Well, we're going to start finding that out August 31st when they play SMU.
Okay, and after the non-conference, I think they go 3-0 non-conference. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't see there's any question with that at all.
Okay. All right, then they get Iowa State. I know Iowa State had a bad game last year or had a bad season last year. They lost to Texas by a call last year at Iowa State. And then after that, they got they kind of fell apart after that. But Baylor lost the last time they were up at Iowa State. That's not an easy place to play.
No, it never is. And for teams that find a way – well, remember Oklahoma State's BCS championship hopes were pretty much thrown out the window when they lost in Ames a couple of years ago. So, I mean, so there's no easy place – to play, although I think that Baylor will find a way to handle it. If that becomes a night game in Ames at Jack Trice Stadium, then, you know, a night game on the road up there is going to make it all sorts of fun. Although I do think that Baylor still is so far better talented. Just talent alone, they should win, but got to go out and play too. Although I do expect them to win the game.
Now, one of the things that's kind of nice about it is that this game's in September instead of being in late November, because I was a lot colder later in the season, but that early, it shouldn't be that bad, that cold up there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, then after Iowa State, they come back, they get Texas on the road, then TCU at home, and then West Virginia on the road before they get another break.
Texas game, as we talked about a moment ago, it's kind of a, I don't know, maybe a 60-40 game that Baylor wins. Going to be a very difficult road there. Just winning on the road in Austin is going to take a lot of a lot of doing. So they've just got to be ready for that, and they probably will be. Opening up the Big 12 play at McLean Stadium, the first game there against TCU. You know, it's hard to know what TCU is going to be looking like at that point, just because the Horned Frogs' offense has got so many questions, and of course they're probably in a better situation since Devontae Fields, their talented defensive lineman who's no longer with the program. But again, that's just a lot of questions there. with TCU in terms of really where that program is at. And then they're on the road at West Virginia and Morgantown. Not an easy place to play. Texas won up there a couple of years ago, or I should say last year. I think it was in overtime. And Oklahoma won the year before, like 50-49 or whatever that was. Just a crazy game up there. And, of course, Baylor's previous visit to Morgantown was the first ever Big 12 game that West Virginia ever played, which was that basketball game on turf that the Mountaineers won 70-63. And, again, as we talked about, Oklahoma State lost there last year. So you just got to be careful on the road. It's never easy, and you better be prepared. And, again, with Baylor in its new position of being someone that, teams are aiming for, you just got to be ready.
Yeah, and one of the things, too, is that it's one of the things Baylor's got to get is they've got to get to where they can win on the road. And they're as good as they are at home. They played some good games on the road, but they're not. They have not traditionally been near as good on the road as they are at home. They're a lot better. Well, they were a lot better at Floyd Casey than they were on the road. We'll find out about McLean.
Yeah, no question.
Okay, after the open date, they get a homecoming against the Jayhawks. And I think that with the Jayhawks, the only real risk is the if they're looking forward to Oklahoma the next week. That's the only thing that I can really see. I think Charlie Weiss, I don't think they can recruit. I don't think they're recruiting in that program. I don't see them really building a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think there's anything there with Kansas. There's a reason why Kansas was scheduled as the homecoming game. So, they should absolutely take care of business. So many questions with Kansas right now. It's such a – I do believe this is a year decision for Charlie Weiss. If they don't find a way to get any kind of relevance this season, I think his position would be in trouble there in Lawrence.
Yeah, unless they're just saying, hey, we'll be a basketball school.
Yeah.
Okay, then they get an open date after Oklahoma, and I think that's the one really good thing about Oklahoma is that they've got a Kansas team that they should beat before. They've got an open date before Kansas, then they play Oklahoma, then they have another open date. So, you know, if you want to talk about being set up for your what should be your toughest game of the season, that's probably about as good as it can be set up.
Yeah, that's it kind of reminds me back in the days when if you think about the old Texas-Oklahoma games, where the week before at the Cotton Bowl, where like Oklahoma would play like Iowa State or Kansas before it went into that game, or when Texas was playing Rice before. I mean, I'm going back to Southwest Conference days, but now in Baylor's sense, this is a perfect scenario for them, just because of the fact that they've got a team that they should absolutely handle with, get them ready. If that game is over at halftime, they should have fresh people, and provided, you know, their health situation being whatever it is at the time. But if they're in relatively decent shape, they can get those starters off the field after the first half. Again, forecasting what we think could happen, and then they would go into Norman probably as healthy as they possibly could, and try and do something that no Baylor football team has ever done, and that's win in Norman, Oklahoma, which would be, if they found a way to pull that off, Stephen, which is the game of the year and could be the understood Big 12 championship game since Oklahoma was picked to win the conference and Baylor was picked second, it would be a dandy. It would probably be a night game. It would probably be, you know, maybe your ABC Saturday night game that would be shown nationally if both teams are having the seasons that we think that they will, and then you just let it run and see how much fun that thing could be.
Okay, after that open date, then they close out with three what right now are predicted to be, I think, middleweight, pretty good punchers with Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, and Kansas State.
Yeah, I think with Oklahoma State, the question is going to be they lost so many defensive starters, and they lost, two really, really good players, in Josh Stewart. Or I should say one really good player in Josh Stewart, It's really going to be an interesting case for them as to how well the Cowboys are playing. So many graduation losses. You know, when I have so much respect for Mike Gundy's program. I still picked him third in the league. I might have been a little bit too over the top in the way I discussed it or the way I rationalized it. But I just think that Mike does a really great job with that program. That you expect him to be good regardless of the changeover in the roster. But again, that's just me. But I do think Baylor would take care of business there because, again, it's at McLean. Then you've got the Texas Tech game at AT&T Stadium in Arlington. Again, there's talks that whole thing is going to get settled, that series is going to be extended with Texas Tech. So that should be good to go there and remain there. Should be a wild game like we saw last year where Baylor fell behind early by a couple touchdowns, stormed back to win the game. And then you close out the regular season against Kansas State. You know, who knows what Kansas State's going to be like this year. They could be really, really good if Jake Waters, their quarterback, comes through to have a season that everyone thinks he can, and a defense that should be getting better by the end of the year. And Kansas State, who knows? Maybe Kansas State might be playing for the conference championship. That's just the one team that you just never know because Bill Snyder just doesn't really say a lot. He says a lot, but he doesn't really say anything, if you will, about his team. Even when you watch his team play, they're so well managed, they're so disciplined, they don't beat themselves. And so, you know, Baylor had a hard time up there, but they found a way to pull that game out in Manhattan, which was a big win for them. And they'll get another challenge with the Wildcats to close out the season.
Yeah, now I was looking at these. I think one of the things about Oklahoma State, because I was up there at that game last year,
right,
and that was they shut down Baylor's passing attack.
Yeah.
And you don't – that was – they were the only team that did it last year. You know, Texas kind of held them down for a while.
Right.
But Oklahoma State shut them down until it didn't matter. So, you know, Oklahoma State's going to make me nervous until Baylor, you know, shows that they can get downfield on them. With Texas Tech, I saw an interesting thing. They said in one of the recent scrimmages, Tech had a freshman quarterback through 6 touchdown passes. And I don't know if that says something really good about the freshman quarterback or if it says something about Tech's defensive secondary.
yeah. I mean, I think a lot is I know we're all cramming and we're all frothing at the mouth for any kind of information about so-and-so did something great and all that kind of stuff. I get that we all want this kind of information, the big blow-up production that we see here. But it's fall camp. And the way that coaches will design this stuff, every program is different. That's great that a kid threw 6 touchdown passes. What does it really mean? Probably nothing. Because is he going to overtake Davis Webb? No. And that's probably Mahomes that did that. But I think that, I mean, what it would show is that the kid's ability is pretty legit, but would he be ready when it's game speed, when the lights are on in a game, in an environment where it counts? That's where you really want to know. That's where you would know.
Yeah, and if he threw it against, you know, third and fourth teamers that, you know, aren't going to see the field, that might not mean that much either.
Right.
Now, what you're saying about Kansas State, it's the thing that Coach Bennett and I talked about when he went back up, before they went up last year. And, of course, you know, Coach Bennett used to coach for Coach Snyder. They've got a history. And part of what is that you don't sit back and wait for Kansas State to make a mistake and take advantage of it. You've got to go out and beat them because they're not going to make a bunch of mistakes, and they're not going – you know, they're going to be solid on offense, defense, special teams, and they're just going to be there the whole game. I think the other thing about Kansas State, this, you know, you said, you know, could be title implications. You never know with Kansas State, but I have a feeling that last game of the season could be a pretty big deal because even if one of these teams has fallen out of the race, one of these teams is probably going to be in the race.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's going to be a big deal game when it comes.
Yeah, or Kansas State could have a say as to if Baylor wins the conference or if it doesn't and makes the and has the chance to play in the 14 playoff. That's where Kansas State might have a huge influence on this.
Okay, and that is about all we can say about these until they tee it up, and that should wrap it up for this one, and we'll see you next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.
The Sikkim Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Ron Nichols or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.